help me welcome our speaker tonight. It is Darren from Soderton. His home group is the Tuesday Night Big Book Study in Lansdale.
I got it. My name's Darren. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be sober today. It's good to be here, too. I want to thank Rich for asking me to speak. When I'm asked to be a service in this program today, I do my best, if at all possible, to be there to help other alcoholics get sober, achieve sobriety. It's one of the most important areas of my life today. This meeting was my home group for a number of years, and due to some life changes about a year ago, I had to switch up my meeting schedule, and I get here when I can, but it's not every week. But I do love this meeting. My sobriety date is August 27th, 1999. I have a sponsor. I sponsor guys. My home group is the Tuesday Night Big Book Study in Lansdale. Come join us. It starts at 8 o'clock. Before I start, there's a prayer that I like to start with. It might be more of a slogan or a saying, but it goes like this. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. Has anyone heard that before? Okay. I open with that because those words kept me stuck in this program in bondage for 9 years. I thought I had AA all figured out, and I knew it was AA's a bunch of old guys drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, and staying sober. That's what I thought AA was while in the program. And man, was I wrong. This program changes people's lives. It changes the lives it changes the families of those people, the coworkers, the friends. I mean, there's such good things happening in this program. And if you haven't experienced that, I beg of you to find someone that sounds like they know what they're talking about and just grab hold tight and do what they say. Because that's what I did. And my life is amazing today. And when I came in, I wanted to die. And I just, I was an absolute mess. I was a disaster. And that's not my experience today. So I'm a little nervous, and the reason is twofold. One, it's so important to me to stand here and try and say something to inspire you guys. Every word counts today that I share at any meeting I go to. It's all important. Because everything I say you might forget, but if there's one thing that helps you stay sober, that counts. That's meaningful to me. And that makes my heart beat a little faster. And the second reason I'm nervous is because I want you to like me. It's been there my whole life. I just want people to like me. Does that make me an alcoholic? I don't know. But I do know ever since I can remember as a little boy, I have done whatever it takes to get people to like me way before I took a drink. I gave up the debate about why I'm an alcoholic, but I'll tell you, for years I played with that. Genetics and maladies and weakness, and I don't care today. I know I'm an alcoholic, and more important is that I'm in the solution, and I am. I am very in the solution today, thanks to men that have gone before me. So, growing up, you know, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I used to say when I shared growing up was normal. You know, I don't know what normal is. It was a little crazy around my house. Red and blue lights was kind of a normal thing, and fighting and cops. And I had an older brother who was always in and out of jail and craziness and a lot of drinking and drugs. And that's just the way it was. And I heard a speaker at this meeting about 4 years ago say something that changed my childhood. And he said, the older I get, the better my childhood gets. And I never forgot that. Because this, what I'm about to say is very important. For 9 years sober in this program, I blamed people for my alcoholism. And that got me nowhere except closer to a drink. And Bill Wilson himself could have came up and said, you can't do that or you shouldn't do that. And I was going to do it anyway. You know, I'm an alcoholic because of this and because of them and society and government and God. And I blamed everyone. And all that did was keep me stuck. It kept me from living the miracles of this program. Because today I accept my alcoholism. And again, I work to do my absolute best to be in the solution. And that's so important. If there's anyone struggling with why they're an alcoholic, please talk to me after the meeting, because that's something that I just don't understand all too well. Today, it's real simple. I'm an alcoholic. I take responsibility. What's next? But I will say that that kept me stuck for so long. One of my first memories is in first grade, I switched schools, and at my new school on the playground, I wanted to make some friends. I wanted people to like me. I went over to the buckabout. Does anyone know what a buckabout is? It's like a four-way seesaw. Yeah. And I took a rock. It's my prayer rock right here. I took a rock, and I carved the F word right into the buckabout. And in first grade, I didn't know what that word meant. And to this day, I still don't know where I got that word. But I thought if I carved that into the buckabout, that the kids I was with would like me. Those kids ran right to the recess duty. I got sent to the principal's office, and I got kicked out of school my first day in first grade. And if I got to be honest with you, it was kind of exciting. You know what I mean? Like, at that point in my life, I was used to chaos, and getting in trouble was, it was kind of just starting out, but it was comfortable on some level. And does that make me an alcoholic? No. But it shows me from a very young age, it was so important that I had people's approval. And I see it in my life today. You know, I will do whatever it takes to get people to like me. But the difference today is I see it and it doesn't own me as much. You know, I am selfish and self-centered to the extreme. Today at work, when an office door closes, immediately my head says, they're talking about me. Anyone else have that? Like, that hasn't gone away yet. You know, I'm like waiting for that. But whenever anything happens, my head says it's about me. And that's just selfishness, because it's not. It's not about me. I think everything's about me. And it's silly. But I see it today. That's the growth. So going on through school, you know, I went through the motions and all the craziness in my family. And in middle school, I was voted class clown in seventh grade. And I thought that was the greatest thing ever. I mean, that was my highest aspiration. You know, people liked me. I made people laugh. It made me feel worthy when I made people laugh, like I was worth something. I started playing the piano at age 5. People watched me play the piano. I was pretty good. Wow, look at Darren. Made me feel good. I started playing the drums. People watched me. Made me feel good. I started playing sports. People watched me, and it made me feel good. And that was the pattern. I loaded my life up with all these outside things because it made me feel okay. But it was an act. See, I'm an actor. And I would come home from school at the end of the day, and I'd be like worn out, like, you know? And so in middle school, eighth grade year, all I wanted to do was get class clown again, and I did. Yay me. I mean, academics meant nothing to me. And the summer of my eighth grade year, we'd seen our parents drinking all the time and having these parties and booze this, and we were just curious kids, and we decided on New Year's Eve that after everyone went to bed, we were going to give it a whirl. And his parents had the bar, all these bottles, and I didn't know one from the other whatsoever. I just wanted to try it, you know, see what this is all about. We started mixing stuff and shots and pouring stuff, and hour later, maybe 2 hours later, my two friends are throwing up, and I'm saying, yeah, this is okay. And I also heard a speaker at this meeting say, the first time they got drunk, the 12 promises came true. Absolutely true for me. You know, I mean, if you guys know the promises, they all, like, everything was good. I didn't have to play the piano, the drums, the sports. I didn't have to be the class clown. For the first time in my existence, I felt okay with me without having to get your approval or do something to get you to like me for the first time. And I knew from that night on that I had found something that's going to work just fine. And one of the memories from that night is my friend is puking in the dog's food dish. You know, he is like hurting. And the rest of the night I don't recall so well, but I finally felt okay with me, and that was a good thing because it was the first time in my life I felt okay with me. So moving on up through the years, I'll keep drugs to a limit for the respect of Alcoholics Anonymous, but my friends and I. At the time, I thought everyone did what we did, but I came to learn that that probably wasn't true. You know, if we couldn't get anything, we'd go to the drugstore, the grocery store, and just steal stuff off the shelf and just put it in our system to try and experience anything. And that was like the norm every weekend. And my junior year in high school, there was a box of wine in the fridge. And this box of wine never ran out, ever. Anyone else have that experience? It was a never-ending box of wine. And I would help myself as much as I wanted without any consequence. No one ever said a word. And my mom drank wine, and and she kept it plentiful. And my junior year, though, something significant happened. I started having just like a little bit before bed every night just to kind of cap off the night and relax after I did my homework. And I went to a prep school. I actually went to Perk Prep. It's not far from here at all. And I was a day student. It's a boarding school. And I'd come home at night and enjoy that and started getting into other things. And the whole point of a prep school, preparatory for college. So my senior year, I got arrested a couple times. I'm not even going to waste your time with that. But they said, okay, Darren, it's time to go to college. It's time to pick a college and a career path and a direction in life, which I just had no interest in. My interest was in partying. You know, that is a fact. And I picked Johnson & Wales University in Providence, Rhode Island, because my best friend was going to Brown, and they're right next to each other. That's why I went to school in Providence, Rhode Island. And I can really sum up the first year pretty quick. I'm not big on drunk-a-logs, but I partied all the time as much as possible on my dad's bill. And I maintained good grades because I didn't want this party to end. Hell no. And we got caught out in front of the dorm smoking something, and the security came by and said, if we catch you again, we're going to search your room, blah, blah, blah. They caught us 2 weeks later. And this was 2 weeks before school was out. And for like 10 minutes, they didn't find anything because everything was so well hidden. But once they found one thing, they found it all. And the dean of the college walked into my dorm room, and I'm in tears. You know, I'm like freaking out. And he says, what are you doing here? It was evident I was not at college to find a direction in life and to find a career path. I was at college because it was a big party. And so I got kicked out of school, went home, and I wrote a letter to the dean to get back in. And I read that letter years ago, and it was such BS. It was terrible. Oh, my God. Just kissing butt to get back in and telling them all these changes I was going to make. And I had a job at school where all people had to do was knock on my dorm door. And the next year, I decided I just have to tone it down a little bit. And I lived off campus, and I just did the same stuff. And one of my closest friends took his life that year. This is 1997. And that was hard. The only way at the time I knew how to process that was to even just step it up a notch. And just drinking every night, having parties, going to parties. And it just wasn't reality, you know. I mean, it was for me at the time, but looking back, I was just on a mission to destroy myself. Because due to the progression of this, I was starting to get into heavier things and crazy things. And, I finally went to a treatment center because everyone was bugging me and got out of the treatment center, I was looking for a way to control and enjoy it. Anyone else ever do that? You know, if I could just get it right, you know, to drink and drug successfully. And I wasn't able to do that. Damn it. And but I thought I was, you know. I thought I might get it right, and I didn't. So in 1999, it's a blur. I really don't remember the year very well. And but I did go to treatment at the Penn Foundation. And I had a friend doing outpatient, and he brought me in some stuff, and I relapsed in a treatment center. And they sent me over to psych ward at Grandview, took my shoelaces and my belt, and oh my God, I was such a mess. They sent me up to White Deer Run, and I did White Deer Run, and they gave me all these diagnoses, ADD, OCD, major depression, I mean, all these, and I finally know what's wrong with me. Today, I stand before you, and I can tell you, I know what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. All those diagnoses, they're fine, that's fine, but when I treat my alcoholism, this is my experience only. The other things seem to iron themselves out. Just my experience. So my story is such that I got put on a plane and sent out to Arizona to a treatment center called the Prescott House. Prescott House is a treatment center for men of all addictions. And I was scared to death to go. You know what I mean? That jumping off place, like the scariest thing in the world was to imagine to keep going the way I was going. The only thing worse than that was to imagine not going in that way. And I jumped. I said, okay. And what the Prescott House did was they took a mirror and they went like this. And that was one of the hardest things I'd ever done, was take a look at me. I don't like me. In fact, I hate me, you know. And I know that from these steps and this program, that dealing with myself and my thoughts and my feelings is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. But I remember they literally, in one of the workshops, held a mirror up and had me just stare at it for like an hour. And that was hard. There's this thing called job search at the Prescott House. And what it is you go get a job. And, you know, they make you get, you know, just any job that you can find. And I took a job at Walmart. And that was really hard for me because I'm better than people that work at Walmart. And I'm glad someone laughed, because that is a joke. I am not better than anyone. We're all God's kids. We're all on the same level. Some of us look different. Some of us make more money. Some make less. But we're all on the same page. I had to learn that in this program. You know, I thought I was better than people that worked at Walmart. And I pushed my carts hard for 12 months. And I was so proud of myself. But that was an important time in my life, because I was learning about this program. And I was staying sober. And I was going to meetings. I was working the steps. I had a sponsor. I was fully engaged in the program. And I'll just say in passing, because it's AA, there were other things in my life that I was starting to get into. You know, to name a few, you know, things like gambling and sex and food and sugar, like whatever. I mean, I think most of us probably have other things to face besides alcoholism. I certainly did. But at that point in my life, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson could have came up to me and said, "You can't do that." And I would have said, "I'm sober, dude. Sorry, it's on." And so that's what I did. But the seeds were planted through going to meetings and working this program, that the whole goal of this whole thing is to develop a relationship with a higher power. And spiritually, when I'd go off on my tangents with the other things, I felt empty and I felt bankrupt. And I knew something was missing. So I moved up to, and I started going back to school, and I got good grades. And I'm not even kidding. Like, it took years after I graduated college. My head says you got lucky. The teachers felt bad for you because you were an older college student. Like, I will not allow myself the dignity to say I did good in school because I was sober and applied myself. That took me years after I graduated, you know? It's crazy. And I went up to NAU, Northern Arizona University, in Flagstaff, Arizona. And it was a great experience. I got right involved in the program and hooked up with some guys and went to young people's meetings and worked the program. And it was a really good time. The one The most challenging thing to happen in my life happened when I lived in Flagstaff, and my brother took his life, and he was my best friend, and it was when I was on the phone, and my mom told me, and I just fell, like my body collapsed, and I've done some work around that since, and he did not have what we have, but he struggled with all kinds of other things, and for about 20 seconds, the thought was, I have to go get loaded. I didn't know how to deal with the thought that my brother is no longer here. I got to go get loaded to deal with this, to cope. 20 seconds. And then it hit me, like, if I pick up, I'm going to follow him. And I knew that in my heart of hearts. So I just got locked into the program. That was a hard time. A dream came true in sobriety while I lived in Arizona. And it's something, you know, we sit on the bar stool or we parties and we always talk about everything we're going to do. One thing I always said is, I'm going to travel the world one day. And partying, I never did that. But I got to do that in sobriety. And I moved to Costa Rica for 5 months. And I picked up Spanish. I lived with a family that didn't speak English, and that was really hard the first month. But ultimately, that's how I learned the language. I went to AA meetings in Spanish, and that's one of the ways that I picked up the language. And I'll tell you what, those people welcomed me in as if you guys would. It was awesome. This thing we got here, it's everywhere. And they were so loving and accepting of me. And I'd share in my Spanglish at first, and eventually I started just sharing in Spanish. And I worked a program down there. And that was an amazing time. Because of time restraints, I'm not going to share much more than that. After Costa Rica, I decided I want to continue traveling the world because I don't have all the responsibilities of life yet. So I moved to Pathum Thani, Thailand. It's about 20 minutes outside of Bangkok. And Thailand was a big step 11. I studied Buddhism, and I went to the temples every weekend and picked up Thai, and it was awesome food and just such awesome people. But I will say something very, very dangerous happened in Thailand. I stayed sober for 5 months without a meeting. And for people like me who have a bad case of this, that's not good. I moved back from Thailand, back to Flagstaff to graduate, and my head said, you just went 5 months without a meeting. I think you might have this. I think I got it. You know, I can laugh about that today, but at the time, man, I was like, hell yeah, I got it. And I'm not going to lie, like, I was doing spiritual things at that point in my life. You know, I did a couple 10-day silent meditation retreats. If you want to see your insanity, go do a 10-day silent meditation retreat. By day 9, I was like, it was a circus. I mean, I had to deal with my thoughts. But that was at a time in my life when I could do that. I stand here today. I could not do a 10-day silent meditation retreat at this point in my life. It'd be too hard. I mean, and I'll get into that just a little bit later. So I moved back to Flagstaff. I graduated college, which was also a dream that I didn't think I'd be able to do because I thought I was too stupid. And after Flagstaff, I moved back to Pennsylvania, to Lansdale. And the big slogan that always went through my mind is meeting makers make it. So I found my Friday night men's group in Lansdale. It's still there. It's a wonderful meeting. And I went to that meeting every Friday. But over time, every Friday, unless something better came up. So here's how it went, guys. This is the part of my story that I want you guys to hear. Years 5 to 9 sober, I slowly, ever so slowly, just started going like this. Less meetings, call my sponsor less service, less practicing the principles in all my affairs, and that's just my story, you know what I mean? I thought I was cured, but meeting makers make it, so I tried to get to my Friday night men's meeting every week, but eventually that was just starting to get in the way. And anyone ever hear of the bedevilments? I know the bedevilments very, very well, because what happened at 9 years sober, nearly to the day, due to other things, outside issues, if you will, I hit my bottom of bottoms, and I didn't even take a drink. But what happened was, if I didn't make some serious changes quick, something was going to happen, and I was going to take a drink, or I don't know. I just knew that something was about to go down. And again, I emphasize because of the other things. I got my ass right back into this program, and I got firm into a foundation. And people talk about a 90 and 90. I'm not impressed with that anymore, because years 9 to 13, I went to a meeting every day. Every day, except Saturday nights, because that was date night. I have a really good sponsor, and he said it's important that you make time for your family, my girlfriend at the time. And we sat down every Saturday, turned the TV off, turned all the electronics off, and we did a puzzle for a year. I don't know, maybe you guys are more gifted than me, but like things like intimacy and communication, I struggle with those things. Thanks to good sponsorship, I was able to integrate that with my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife. And that was hard. You know what I mean? Like, we just had this system set up, and we're going along. And I was gone to 6 meetings a week. And if she said that doesn't work for me, I would have said, I'll see you later. My alcoholism had taken me to a point of complete, utter despair. It's hard to put into words, but if you know what the bedevilments are, that's essentially what it dealt with. So in those years, what happened was the big book came alive for me. My first 9 years, I did the best I could. But finally, the last 7 words of step 12 were in full effect for the first time in my life. And those 7 words are, practice these principles in all of our affairs. You see, my first 9 years sober, I did some, most, if they worked. Today, I do my best to practice these principles in all my affairs. I make mistakes. I make plenty of mistakes. But what happened was, when I hit my bottom, I said the most sincere prayers I had ever said in my life. I said, God, I don't know why I'm here. I don't think I should be here. I said to my sponsor, I said, on the tree of life, there are branches that need to be cut off so that the rest of humanity can move forward. And he said, yeah, I agree with that. And I said, and I'm one of those branches. And he said, no. And I said, well, then I need you to tell me that there's hope for someone as sick as me. And all he said, he's a man of few words, you guys know Lefty. he said, yeah, there is hope for you. And that meant everything to me. Because in 2008, right after the Phillies won the World Series, there are people in the streets dancing, screaming. There's fireworks going off. And I'm crying on my back porch, smoking a cigarette. I kid you not, I was crying because my whole life had tumbled. I thought I knew this program better than anyone. I thought I had the formula that got me healed and cured, and I don't have to be one of them freaking alcoholics anymore. And it all came crashing down. I didn't have this figured out, not even close. In fact, I felt like a newcomer. And for years, coming to this meeting, I just did what I was told, and I did those chairs, and I got to know people, and I really learned the wonderful things going on in this program, because there are beautiful things happening here. And if you're sitting there tonight thinking AA's this or it's not that much, you're wrong. You're selling yourself short. Find someone that's on fire and get involved, because there's just amazing things that I continue to find happening all the time. And in those, I mean, really, like years 9 to 13 for me, it was like a new beginning for me. Because like I said, I thought I had this all figured out. And I didn't. So when it comes to the steps, I thought I knew how to do the steps. You know, my sponsor told me, you live step one. You demonstrate on a daily basis what step one means. To be powerless over alcohol. I get that today. Hyphen, that my life is unmanageable. Hyphen means a new thought. I need someone to help me manage my life today. I don't know about you guys, but I have the best sponsor in all of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was also told at this meeting, if you have a sponsor and you don't think they're the best, go find someone who's the best. And that always resonated with me. Because once at this meeting, when the meeting was outside, I go up to my sponsor and I'm talking to him and he says, "Don't you get it? I don't care if you like me or not. I care that your kids don't turn out like you did." See, some people hear that and they're like, "That's terrible. Oh my gosh. That's one of the most loving things that anyone's ever said to me. My way did not work. And I tried it to the bitter end to try and make my way work throughout my whole life." You know, when I came to him with any issue, it was good. It was good feedback. It was good advice. And I allowed him to come into all corners of my life. Even that stuff. You know, we all have that stuff. Today, I let it all come out. And what I know today is that the darkest parts of my life can help someone else in these rooms. And that's gold. You know, I don't know where else you can find that in the world. But the things that I like least about myself can help other people heal and get better. Not get healed, but have a process of getting better. So at that point in my life, a whole bunch of guys at the Lansdale Clubhouse, at least younger guys, started asking me to sponsor them. And I'm like on the phone, like, "I can't sponsor these guys." He's like, "Darren, you have to sponsor these guys." He said, you can't make these guys any worse than they already are. And I debated that. Like, I was scared to death to try and help another alcoholic. But see, the whole process here, you know, the 12 steps, you keep going. You don't do the 12 steps and then you're done. I mean, maybe some people do. That's not how I was taught. You know, we do these things on a daily basis. So today, I chaired a meeting last night and the topic was step one. And I shared a little bit and I said, "Let me hear from you guys. What does that look like?" That's a huge deal, learning about step one and how to apply it into our daily lives. A lot of my sobriety, I just thought I knew God better than everyone. And step two was hard because it was like I was reinventing step two. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. The word God conjured up all kinds of crazy ideas. And at that point in my life, I was finally teachable. And he just said, you know, going to meetings, getting to know people, you know, living the first three steps. That's how you work the first three steps. Or as Jimmy from Thursday night in Montgomeryville says, you do your first step on a bar stool. I always like that too, you know. There's nothing to write. But I am very adamant that I need to keep learning how to apply step one into my life. And I sat down with a sponsee this past Sunday and we talked about step one. And I walked away like, that's gold, because I'm learning about me and what I have. You know, working with new people is so important. And learning to deepen a relationship with a higher power. I've studied all the world's major religions. I immersed myself in a couple of them. I was a part of a Hindu group for 6 years and did a lot of meditation and breathing techniques and yoga. I do Emmett Fox retreats, and I study metaphysical Christianity. I have done hundreds of shamanic sweat lodges with natives, with white people. Like I said, I lived in Thailand and studied Buddhism intensely. I practiced a Hawaiian prayer course. I have tried every possible spiritual avenue out there because I'm fascinated with God and how God works. But today, again, my belief in God is no bigger or better than anyone else's. It's just learning what works. God, to me, is laws of the universe. You know, if you throw something up, it's going to fall down. And I have my mortgage with Univest Bank. And at Univest, they used to have this big cookie tray where you could take a cookie. But I would take two. Because I have a mortgage with Univest, and that entitles me to taking two cookies. I assume a couple people laugh because they get that feeling of entitlement, like I deserve a little bit more than other people. I still have it today. The difference is I see it, and I don't have to act on it today. But there's little things like that in my life. So, you know, just to kind of move through the steps. You know, step four is equally as important as all the other steps. And like I said, all my stuff came out. All my resentment list, I got up to 100. And I told my sponsor, and he's like, 100? If you haven't figured it out by 30, you're doing something wrong. I hate to break the news to anyone here. The point of step four is to see that you have a part in everything. And for people like me who are selfish and stubborn and hard-headed, I'm an expert inventory taker. Just not my own. But thanks to good sponsorship, the best sponsorship, I got real clear that everything I'm holding on to, all the anger, all the fear, all the remorse, I started the ball rolling. And there was even a couple where I didn't start the ball rolling, but I saw if I didn't let go of these things, I was going to drink. And for me, to drink means to die. That might not be the case for everyone in this room tonight, but I know if I pick up alcohol again, I'm going to pick up right where I left off, and all bets are off. And I'm not willing to go there today. So I did five with my sponsor at the kitchen table. You know, six and seven, looking at my character defects, they're there every day. You know, I ask God to remove them if that's what needs to be done. Steps eight and nine for me have been, well, step nine has been pretty, it's hard to say the most important step, but here's what happened. When I first got sober, I did the steps according to Darren, and I went right to nine. And I started saying sorry to people and wrote some letters, and I started feeling a little bit better. See, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. We get into the rooms in the program, and our life gets better. This is important. And we say, thanks, AA, I'll take it from here. I mean, I think most people on some level go through that. It's the story of my life. So all these amends that I needed to make were right in front of me at 10 years sober. And I completed every last one of them. Before I ever put a drink in my system, I told you in middle school I was the class clown. And I used to pick on kids for things like the clothes they wore. It's a part of my story I'm like completely ashamed of, but it's my story. So I met with this one guy who I used to just be mean to for no reason. I was like the bully with big friends. I wasn't tough in the slightest, but I thought I was because I had friends. And I sat down with him, and I cried. I said, Warren, I want to make amends to you for the way I treated you in middle school. And this guy's like a volunteer firefighter, you know, like one of society's heroes. And I picked on him in middle school, and I can't take that back. But today, he's one of my friends, and we keep in touch. And that's how step nine went for me. I went right to the ones that I didn't want to make because I knew I was going to have to. I am a firm believer that if you don't make your amends, you'll probably drink again. I'm not going to put that on everyone, but it's absolutely true for me. Now, my dad. I stole money out of my dad's wallet like it was going out of style. I used to just go in, you know, take whatever I wanted. He never knew. So at 10 years sober, I mean, my dad and I have a really good relationship. I had to sit down with him with a check, and I didn't know how much money I stole. I had no idea. But in my heart, I knew it was between this and this number. And I went right in the middle. I talked to my sponsor, and that seemed right. And I gave my dad this check, and I said, Dad, I stole this money from you. And you know what he did? He cashed the check. Yeah, you're telling me. I didn't know he was going to do that. But guess what? It's his money. It's absolutely his money. Like, at 10 years sober, a part of me still thought, like, I was in the right to steal from my dad, who's always been there for me. And the same thing happened with my mom and with all the people I owed financial amends to. This is important. I know I keep saying that, but this is really important. With every amends I made, I started feeling this peace. And if you haven't felt it, get to step nine and do it, because it is awesome. You know, they call them the ninth step promises. Some people call it the 10th step promises. I don't care. All I know is when I started making my amends, my life started changing fast. Everything, you know, We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. That happened to me, and it continues to happen to me today. My step 10 has evolved and changed through the years, from phone calls to writing stuff to you know, praying and meditating. And my step 10 is very automatic today. I don't do it before bed at night. If I screw up during the day, I make it right away. And I know it today. I don't know how to give that to you guys, but when I step on someone's toes, when I'm fearful, or when I hurt someone, if I owe an amends, I do it right away. And this, I don't like saying sorry to people. I really don't. It goes against my nature. I like being right. When I say sorry to you, there's less chance that I'm going to do it again. And that is some of the gold of step 9. You know, if I make amends to you, it's like, you know, it's like, it's a part of the psychic change that happens. You know, like my pride, I got to swallow my pride. I had to make amends to a lot of people I work with. You know, I made amends to my wife, and just the more that I did, the better my life was getting. And my last amends, not my last, but the last one I want to share about, is when I lived in Providence, I used to go into stores and steal stuff just for the thrill of stealing. I didn't need it, you know, and I'd go and steal stuff and try and get the money. I'd do all that, but I remembered there was this one store that I stole from regularly, and I didn't know how to contact these people. So I called the AA central office in Providence, Rhode Island. I said, hey, this is my deal. I'm in AA. I stole from this store on Thayer Street. Can you help me? Blah, blah, blah. Like an hour later, this guy calls me back with all the information. You know, it was awesome. And he said, unfortunately, the store's gone out of business. Call my sponsor. The store's gone out of business. He says, that's what happens when there's people like you in the world. You know what I mean? And I wasn't able to find the people. I mean, I left a voicemail, and he called me back, and he said, you know, it's done. But I pursued it and pursued it and pursued it. In my heart of hearts, I wanted every amends to get done. And I sent him a check. And the same thing with, like, CVS. They're like, we don't know how to accept your money. I said, look, you don't understand. You need to take my check. And so, you know, because, see, a part of my amends process was, if it's too hard, I'll just go donate money to a charity. That is not step 9. And that's thanks to good sponsorship that I learned that. Because if I'm doing step 9 my way, it's like, if you steal money from me, I'd like you to return it to me. I learned that from my sponsor. And things didn't fully feel right until I finished all of my amends. And again, if something crops up today, I'll finish it. Step 11, I've always said it's one of my favorite steps because I'm a kind of a God freak. But I have a 14-month-old son today. In the process of becoming owner of my company, I own a house. I have a full-time job. I have a full-time program. I mean, I'm sure you guys, this resonates with a lot of you. We get sober and our life gets good and our life gets real busy. But this is what I do every morning. Upon awakening, it says, I've learned from the Thursday night that means eyes open and you start doing what the big book says. Some people are really disciplined, you know. I go downstairs. I open up an Emmett Fox book, Around the Year with Emmett Fox. I read the meditation for the day. I read 86 to 88, and I read one more book, and then I close my eyes for 5 to 10 minutes. And that's one of the most important parts of my whole day. And when I don't do it, I feel it. And if I have time throughout the day, you know, sometimes I'll pause and just take a deep breath or say a prayer. Those are important times too. But I try and live step 11, not just, you know, when you share at a meeting, I'm a chameleon. I can go to a meeting and spout it off and sound like I know what I'm talking about. I try and cultivate prayer meditation into my life every day. Step 12, like I said, it's ongoing. Learning how to help other people is the most sacred part of this program for me. Every word that I say counts today. When a guy asked me to work with him, that means so much to me. It means everything to me because I remember when I got sober, how beat up and broken I was and how much I was like, I needed help. I've been sponsor reliant. I'll admit it. Rich knows. The goal is to become God dependent and God reliant, and that's absolutely, I'm in that process. I do rely on my sponsor for a lot. He's more of a mentor to me now. But here's the whole trick. When you start sponsoring other guys, and I can't give this to you, but Lefty taught me how to do it. You learn how to process your own stuff through what he's going through. I don't know what other programs in the world have that, but it is not to be missed. Because when he's saying, oh, I have this struggle, and I don't like this person, I see it in my own life today. He's sponsoring me. So when someone asked me to sponsor him today, as busy as my life is, and if those of you that have kids, I try and be the best dad that I can, but I will sponsor guys no matter what it takes because it's so important to me today. In addition to deepening my relationship with God, I mean, practicing these principles in all my affairs, my experience is that for a long time, I practiced the principles in some of my affairs. And if there's anyone in this room tonight that's struggling with things other than alcoholism, like, welcome. You know, sit tight and find someone and talk to them about whatever it is you're going through. Because I guarantee it, there's someone else in this room who has either gone through it or knows someone that's struggling with it. I always thought, when I stopped drinking, 10-year-old pure innocent Darren was going to step forth and walk the road to freedom and happiness. I'm serious. That is not the case for me. When I put down alcohol, I didn't know how to live life. That big book became alive, that first 164 pages. 5.5 years ago, when I read the doctor's opinion, I was like, what have I been missing? Those first 164 pages, that's my book. And I read it. I try and live it. I try and pass it on. It's if you're struggling, you know, get involved in that book. Because the 12 steps are outlined in the first 164 pages. I love To Wives. I do. Like everyone, oh, no, we're going to read To Wives. I get so much out of that. To Employers, all these things that I thought I knew in the big book. There's so much good wisdom to be found in those chapters. I just had contempt prior to investigation. I'm not a wife. What do I have to learn from this chapter? And at my Tuesday night meeting, we break down the first 164 pages over and over again. And I've learned so much. So just in the last 5 minutes, I just want to talk about my life today to offer hope to anyone who's struggling or that's new, that doesn't think they can have a good life. AA has given me so much more than sobriety, you know, and the 12 promises. Like last year, I went to a goals retreat with a bunch of guys in the program, and we made a list of goals, and I got an accountability partner, and I accomplished all but two of my goals. And to you guys, that might not be a big deal, but I'm usually someone who's like just kind of sliding by through life. These guys constantly raise the bar for me. And my mentor asked me to pick an unattainable goal. And I didn't know what that was for a while. But my unattainable goal was to run a marathon because I've always liked running. And ever since he said that, I started running. And a couple Saturdays ago, I ran 16 miles. And, like, I didn't know all this was going to happen. Has anyone in this room ever heard move a muscle, change a thought? Gold. Absolute goal. Because, see, I'll sit in my chair at work and I'll get stuck in a problem or a resentment. And if I do that, the problem's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger until I'm like a big dramatic idiot. If I go outside and just run up and down real quick, that does something. It mixes it up for me. See, the problem centers in my mind. My alcoholism centers right up here. As far as I'm concerned, alcohol is the solution to my problem, to shut my mind up. I didn't know that. I thought alcohol was the problem. Alcohol made life bearable for most of my life. But today, when I get out running, that's meditation for me. I talk to God. Sometimes I listen to music. But when I'm moving, it feels good. So I don't know. Maybe you like biking or swimming or yoga or Pilates or Qigong. I mean, but just start moving because it's been one of the big things in 2013 that changed my life. And just reaching all my goals. B Being a father is pretty much one of the most sacred things I believe possible in human form, because I saw and I've seen what, you know, how you can raise a kid and what can be the outcome of that. And I love being a dad. I love playing with my son. He's about to be 15 months and he's into everything and he smiles at me. Like, I love being a dad today. And if you would have told me when I first got sober that I was going to be a dad, I wouldn't have gotten that. Like, there's no possible way. My wedding day was the best day of my life. And I didn't know that was going to happen. I have a good marriage today. I have tough times. We go through stuff, I think, as most people do. But every night we have check-in time and we talk about, is anything cropping up? Where are we at with the bills? We communicate. We talk about intimacy. You know, I didn't know all these things were going to happen from being sober. I like my job today. Some days I love it. Some days I hate it. But I like my job today. And I'm there every day. And I show up early. And I stay late. And I work hard. And I do my best to practice all the principles at my job. And that just seems like the tip of the iceberg. Again, if you're new and you don't think that this program has anything to offer you, or that it's for old guys that drink coffee and smoke cigarettes, it's not. There's so many good things going on here, and I beg of you to just get involved and you know, find someone that sounds like they know what they're talking about and just do what they say, because that's what I did 5 years ago. You know, I was 9 years sober, but I felt like an absolute newcomer. And AA has changed my life. And this is my home. I'll be doing this for a long time. And if they find a cure for alcoholism, I'll take two. You know what I mean? That's just the way it is for me. You know, meetings, sponsorship, reading the big book, this whole process, I'm going to keep doing it. I want to end with my favorite words from the big book, because I think they're pretty inspiring. And it comes from page 25, and there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. I love this part. We have found much of heaven and have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had only dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. I want to close up by sharing something that Rhubarb Jim said at this meeting a couple years ago, which changed my entire sobriety, and I never forgot it. There's a saying in the rooms that we don't get people drunk and we don't get them sober. And I would beg to differ on that. We absolutely get people sober. And if it wasn't for people getting people sober, I would not be standing here today with chills right now as we speak. The men in these rooms that saved my life mean everything to me. Not to be missed. Thanks for letting me share.